I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. Today we'll be talking with the president of New Shelves Books about the state of publishing in the U.S. today. Amy Collins is the president of New Shelves Books, one of the largest book sales and marketing content providers in the U.S. As a former sales director for a large publishing company, she has spent her career working with Barnes & Noble, Target, Costco, just to name a few, and is a trusted expert, speaker, and recommended sales consultant for some of the largest book and library retailers and wholesalers in the industry. New Shelves has a team of sales and marketing professionals, and in the last 20 years, Amy and her team have sold over 3 million books into bookstores, libraries, and chain store markets for small and mid-sized publishers. Her book is called The Right Way, so welcome, Amy.
Thank you. I'm really a huge fan. Thank you so much for having me on.
The feeling is mutual. So tell me a little bit about your passion, how you got here, and then tell me a little bit about the state of publishing and how we've gotten where we are today.
Well, personally, I have been in the publishing industry for more years than I'm going to admit on the air. But I will tell you that in 1991, I was a musician, touring musician, and I don't know if you know any touring musicians, but we don't make a lot of money. So I got a part-time job in a bookstore for Christmas money for the family, and that started my career in publishing. By February, I was working there full-time, and by April, I was their book buyer. And I stayed a book buyer for 5 years for a lovely, it's a nice-sized chain of stores in upstate New York. And after 5 years, I became a sales rep, and the publishing industry has been my career and my life, 25 years now, and I have seen a lot of changes. I was around before Amazon existed. I watched Walden Books get purchased and bought and go from an independent chain to part of the Borders and eventually owned by Kmart. It's been quite a ride, and my passion, as you put it, is staying on top of what's going on in the publishing industry. It changes every 5 minutes. And my job has always been to pay attention to what's going on and to help the books, the publishers, and the authors that I work with stay abreast of those changes so that they can take advantage of them and not get caught flat-footed.
So let me just start by saying you're right, you're old. You just proved it to me. All right.
Well, this is a show for women over 40.
It is.
You didn't say how over 40.
You're absolutely right. Okay, so let's start with the stats that will help the listener understand about the numbers of books published, say, when you started versus now, the number of books the publishers would take then versus now, and what's happened to the mainstream publishing industry.
All right, so there's two sides of publishing industry. There's the manufacturing side, the publishers, the people who actually create the books, and then there's the consuming side, the retailers, those who buy and sell the books, the ones that grab the books the manufacturers, also known as publishers, have created. And both of those numbers have changed dramatically. When I got started, I was working for a small division that's now owned by actually Random House. But when I got started with a small company called Prima Publishing, there we talked about the big eight. There was eight large publishers, and there was, on average, 1,200, a fair estimate, about 1,200 legitimate publishers spread throughout North America, U.S. and Canada. 1,200 publishers that were part of the American Publishing Association. And the vast majority of them, the almost all of them, were what we would call traditional publishers. Self-publishing did not exist at this point. You were either a publisher or you weren't. Self-publishing back in the mid-90s was not a thing yet. However, the retailers, there was over 8,000 stores where books could be sold. bookstores and book and gift stores. Gift stores sold a lot of books back then. There was the Walden chain, there was Lariat's, there was Encore, there was Crown, there was FYE. There was an enormous amount of retailers at that point.
How come?
8,000 retailers.
How come?
Mm-hmm.
How come?
Well, because the internet wasn't around yet. I mean, it was around, but we weren't buying anything on the internet yet. And we had millions and millions of Americans who wanted to buy books and entertainment. Back then, CDs were still a big thing. DVDs, movies, VHS, a huge thing. DVDs didn't kick in actually till the next year, but movies and entertainment, and what we called, we were what we called entertainment omnivores. Households who got their entertainment from movies and books and games. Remember Atari and,
yeah,
PlayStation and,
yeah,
and all of those? That was all in the mid-90s. That was huge. PlayStation was huge. So the Xbox came out right around that. You know, Microsoft started getting into gaming. Books got more and more competitive because they were not only fighting with each other, they were fighting with other forms of entertainment. So what happened over the next 10 to 15 years is, you know, we started with 1,200 publishers, 8,000 retailers. Those numbers started changing dramatically. There is now over 5,000 publishers in the U.S. and Canada alone registered with the ISBN organizations in both the U.S. and Canada. 5,000 publishers. Now, a publisher, for the sake of today's radio show, is a company that has at least four books by at least three different authors. That's the definition of a publisher in my mind. A company that pays royalties, that does not get paid to publish books. They actually buy the publishing rights from an author, and they have at least four different books by three different publishers. That is the same threshold that the Library of Congress uses. So that's the one we're going to use today. So there's more than three times as many publishers, and there's about 30% of the retailers there used to be. There's just over 2,000 independent bookstores and gift stores out there. There's only 680 or so Barnes & Noble. That's not including the university stores, but most college bookstores sell a lot more sweatshirts than books. There is no Borders. There's no Walden. There's no Crown. There's no Lariat. They don't exist anymore. There's Books A Million. Love them. There's Barnes & Noble. But Hastings closed. Most of the chains are slowly folding in on themselves. However, independent bookstores are on their way up. Just a year ago, there were 1,800 independent bookstores. Now there's over 2,000. In the last 5 years, 700 independent book and gift stores have opened up just in the last 5 years. So keep an eye on those. But do you see how the numbers swap? We now have more publishers than we do bookstores.
I think the issue would then be, if you are a published author or you wanted to become published, the choices are overwhelming. How would you even know whether you should try to vet out a traditional publishing house versus doing it yourself? How do you make choices? And then how would you even know where to go with your product?
Well, you start by understanding the three different avenues available to you. So with your permission, I'm going to quickly explain those. So the first one is traditionally published, which I've already described, a publisher that will purchase the publishing rights from you and pay you a royalty if you're an author. And then there's what we call self-publishing or independent publishing, where you publish the book yourself. Instead of selling the publishing rights to a publisher who will have the book edited and designed and laid out and will sell and market it and publicize it, you do all that yourself. You have it edited. You have it designed, laid out. In this day and age, with print-on-demand being what it is, many people feel they don't need a publisher. They can hire an editor just as easily as a publisher can. They can hire a publicist just as easily. And a lot of them decide to. So they start their own company. They start a small indie press, also known as self-publishing. That's another option. The third option has a lot of names. Hybrid publishing, co-publishing. It used to be called vanity press. There's a long, legitimate history of vanity publishing, co-publishing, also known as hybrid publishing. Mark Twain, he had his own book, Vanity Pub, the first couple of books, actually, were published by, he paid to have them published for a publisher. But a co-publisher, also known as a hybrid publisher, is a publisher that the author pays to have them do all the work for them. The ISBN, the branding, the publishing rights all go to the publisher, but the financial onus is on the author. And the author is the one who pays for the editors and the designers. What's nice about this hybrid version, this third version, is they often get a lot more than the 7 to 10% royalty rate that they would get if they were traditionally published. And often the book is published far more professionally than it would have been if they had to figure it out themselves. So to start, do those three definitions make sense before I...
They make sense, but if I'm a good writer and I have a good product, but I have no idea how well my book is going to do, so therefore I'm not sure how much money I'd like to pay someone to edit it, to publicize it, to market it, whatever other aspects I'm in need of. How do I start from the ground making that determination?
Well, I can tell you what I would do. I am a nonfiction author. I have written several books that are what we call prescriptive how-to, meaning I'm a very bossy woman. I sat down and on paper, I told a couple of people in a couple of different books exactly what they should do. That's what prescriptive how-to is. It's, you know, a how-to book. How to publish a book, how to de-stress, how to get over a bad childhood, how to get divorced. These are not all my books, I'm just saying. That's what prescriptive how-to is. Excuse me. So if you've written a how-to book, and if you're a professional and have an expertise in a particular area, such as my expertise is publishing, so if I've written a book about how to self-publish, it doesn't make sense for me to go to a publisher. I can hire an editor, and I did, and a designer. I will take the time and do the research. Perhaps I would hire an expert, and I did. I hired a woman named Michelle DeFilippo from 1106 Design. She is far better at design than I am. I did not do it myself, even though I've been in publishing since, you know, Jesus himself was in short pants.
Oh, no.
Even though I've been around forever, even I would not design my own book. I hired some professionals to do it, and I decided I wanted the control of my brand. I wanted to own my ISBN, and I did not want to give up any part of my publishing process to someone else. If I was a novelist, if I'd written the great American novel or a wonderfully romantic book or a thriller, a mystery, a western, this is what I would have done differently. I would have spent a year or two trying to get an agent and trying to get a publishing deal. I would have submitted my book and my queries to agents and to publishers all over the U.S. and Canada, and I would have tried to get some feedback. Let them tell you if you're any good. If I was a novelist, I would have gone a very different route. And so that's how I would have started. Everyone thinks they sing beautifully. Everyone thinks that their writing is stellar. That's just not the case. I'm afraid that really good writing, exemplary writing, is extremely rare. If it wasn't rare, we wouldn't have, you know, so few best-selling authors. There's a reason why only a few people make it to the top. And as much as I would love to tell everyone that reason has nothing, that it's only luck, that it's luck and it's maybe nepotism, you know what else it is? It's talent. And whether or not you have the talent to go all the way and the moxie and the energy and the self-promotional skills, there's a lot to go into it. Start with talent. And if you want to determine whether or not your book is any good, have some experts tell you. And the best experts I know of are editors and agents.
Mm-hmm. So before we go to a break, can you give me some idea of dollars and cents? So today's bestsellers, what can an author hope or expect to make as opposed to somebody who self-publishes and kind of languishes in a medium arena, you know, not too badly and not too great?
Well, I can tell you exactly. And because I'm a music major with an English degree, I have my calculator in my hand.
Super.
I would like whoever's listening to assume that the book that we're talking about is $18, that it's an $18 paperback. Can we all agree that's where we're going to start?
That would be $17.99, correct?
Well, yes, okay. But because I'm doing math.
Yes.
Which means that if you got a publishing deal from Random House or Sourcebooks or one of the larger houses, and you are a first-time author, you're probably looking at a 7 to 10% net royalty, depending on whether or not the book came out in paperback, how strong your platform was. But let's assume you're going to get an 8% royalty. Let's just err on the side of just, you know, right on the lower end of the middle. That means that for an $18 paperback, you are making approximately 65 cents per unit for every unit that sells.
Mm-mm.
This is not new. This is not new. I published with Adams Media in 2003. I made 7.5% royalty on a $14 paperback. These are not new numbers. That is what you will make anywhere from 65 cents to maybe a dollar per unit. I mean, and that's really pushing it. You're making a dollar a book once you've proven yourself and if you have a huge platform and you had a very aggressive agent negotiating for you.
I can hear the proverbial groans out there.
I'm sorry, guys.
It's okay, but I hear all these listeners driving along thinking they thought they had a shot, and suddenly it became real. Before we go to break, what would you like to say to all those people?
Stick around till after the break. The numbers get better. The news gets better. And I'm here to tell you that if I can make a living in publishing, anyone can. So stick around.
Okay. We'll be back. And we are back. So what great news do you have for me now?
If you decide to self-publish, and if self-publishing, again, I'm talking about starting your own publishing imprint and publishing your book yourself. If you decide to self-publish, that same $18 book will net you per unit. Hold on one second. $2. You know, maybe $1.95, maybe $2.10, but on average, self-publishing, you will make roughly $2 a book after printing costs, but you'll make $2 a book profit for every unit sold.
But wait a minute, I still haven't hired my publicist, my marketer, my editor. That's assuming...
I have factored all that in.
Okay.
If you hire an editor, and if you hire a designer... You're looking, in my estimation, you're looking at anywhere from $2,500 to $4,500 to publish your book properly.
Mm-hmm.
That is, and I'm talking about a 60,000-word manuscript. Mm-hmm. If you've got a 15,000-word manuscript, you don't really have a full book. What you have is a white paper or a booklet. And if you have a 100,000-word manuscript, no publisher wants that either. Books aren't that big. That's not, I mean, okay, the Outlander and Harry Potter series aside, that's not how most first-time authors get into the industry. We're looking at about 60,000 to 80,000 words on average. So if you get a publishing deal, they pay for everything. But because they're taking the risk and putting all the money out, you get a smaller cut of the profits.
I got it.
Because they have to keep their lights on. They have to pay their employees.
Okay.
They had to pay for an editor and a designer, but they still have to pay for customer service, for everything else. If you're self-publishing, you're customer service. They're your lights. So you don't have to pay for all that.
So let's say that I am a self-published author, and I have a pretty good shot at selling a fair amount of them, but now I have to work toward getting it in, say, a place like Barnes & Noble. Should that be my goal, or should I set my sights lower or work with just Amazon? Where do I want to look toward?
Well, the answer is it depends, and I'd like to give you two different scenarios. Again, I know it sounds like I'm not answering directly, but there's very different answers depending on your situation. If you've written a fantastic, let's say, YA Wolfman vampire novel, let's say that you've done some sort of occult YA, meaning young adult, and keep in mind, young adult fiction does not mean technically that young adults are reading it. Tons of adults read young adults. So don't be discouraged by that. But if you've written a vampire-based YA novel, if you were my client, I would suggest that you spend the first 90 days promoting your book online as an ebook and a print book online. I would suggest that that first 90 days, you go after every blogger, every recommendation website, every reviewer. You spend 90 days exhausting yourself getting the online world to talk about your book. 90 days after that, I would spend that 90 days trying to go after libraries, because there are tons of growth in the library market right now. Library foot traffic and budgets are going up. And if you're a YA author, libraries are definitely where you want to focus. Tons and tons, according to the Pew Foundation, over 45% of Americans have been in a library in the last month. That's huge.
Am I allowed to ask you whether or not they went there to use the water fountain, or they were actually using it for books?
Well, I don't know. I'll have to check.
Okay.
With the Pew Foundation.
Okay.
But being that only 5% of Americans have been in a bookstore in the last year, I'd say that even, you know, while they're there, they're probably perusing books, even if they went in to use the internet.
You know, that's amazing. What do you attribute that to? I mean, I would think it would be the other way around. I would actually think there would be fewer people in libraries and a significant number of people in the bookstores.
Well, with the economy being what it is, fewer and fewer people are spending fewer and fewer people have the money to spend on speculative fiction.
Sure.
And the library is a great way to get their entertainment for less money. Now,
sure.
The Book Industry Study Group did a study with Nielsen BookScan. And Nielsen BookScan and the Book Industry Study Group, combined with the Bureau of Census data, they crunched all the numbers, and they determined that there's four different kinds of reading households. There's the uninterested reading households. Even households that do not claim to be readers, that they actually say they're not readers, even they buy 5 books a month. They have to because of school. Or they buy them as gifts or for small children. So even people who aren't active readers buy 5 books a month on average. Gamers, remember I was talking about PlayStation and Xbox and all of them?
Sure.
Gamer households buy on average 4 books a month. Social and entertainment omnivores, people who go to movies and watch TV and listen to the radio, whether it's NPR or Sean Hannity, and read, but people who get their entertainment and their distraction from all sorts of different elements, they buy on average 7 books a month. And avid readers, again, this is according to Nielsen BookScan, one of the most trusted number crunchers out there, from the census data, avid reader households buy on average 9 books a month.
That's amazing.
These people go to libraries and they buy online. 55% of book purchases in the United States and Canada are being done online right now. Not all of them through Amazon, but they are online. At least 45% of the purchases, which is about $2.8 billion a year,
wow,
going through bookstores. Billion with a B.
Wow. So, where do you get your metrics then for how well your book is doing if you're a self-published author and you've had the graces to be able to be in Barnes & Noble, but then you have all the independent booksellers and you also have the airport book places? How do you gather stats showing how well your book is doing and how well it's rated and how many people are buying it?
After I spent 90 days promoting my book, getting reviews and discussion about my book online, and focusing on Amazon and online sales. And then I've spent 90 days trying to get my book into libraries all over the country. And then I've spent 90 days trying to get into bookstores, stores such as Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, the independents, gift stores if possible. If you've written a book about how to take care of an elderly dachshund, then get into pet stores. Don't just stop at the bookstores. So if you've spent those 90 days doing one, two, a third 90 days doing stores, and then a fourth 90 days going after stores like the airport stores, after a year of promoting and pushing, getting reviews, never letting up on the media, never passing up an opportunity to contact a newspaper or a magazine and suggest a story idea to them. If after a year of promoting and pushing your book and getting it everywhere you can, my idea of successful sales would be anywhere from 50 to 70 copies a week being sold on average. That would be the low end. Anything less than that, and I would think, okay, I need to do more. But if I was selling 50 to 60 copies a week, after that year, it's not going to happen your first month. It's not going to happen your first quarter. If you are a self-published author, nobody knows who you are, it takes a while to build up that momentum. You're not HarperCollins. Nobody's going to come out with TV cameras and, you know, do an interview with you just because you put out a book the way they would if you were a HarperCollins author. But you get to keep a lot more of the money, and your book gets a lot more of your attention for a lot longer.
We have very little time left. Can you just give me a brief tip to leave the listener with today?
Sure. Never give up and do two things a day. My tip to you is that any one of us can do two things a day. We can reach out to two media people. We can reach out to two stores. If you do two things a day, 5 days a week, your book will have some measure of success. Just don't give up and keep going. You will be able to join those of us who are selling books and actually making a living at it.
We've been talking with Amy Collins, the president of New Shelves Publishing, about the state of publishing in the U.S. today. She can be found at www.newshelves.com. She is the publishing maven. And I would like to know the names of some of your books for the listeners, please.
If anyone would like to go to my website, newshelves.com, your listeners are more than welcome to download a free copy of The Right Way, Right, W-R-I-T-E. The Right Way is my newest book. It's out for self-publishers, and I made it free as an ebook specifically for your listeners. And if you want a paper copy, go to Amazon or to my website and buy one. But if you're good with an ebook, you can download it free from my website at newshelves.com.
I want to thank you so much, Amy, for joining me today. I was excited to have you, and I hope the listener has gotten a lot out of it. I'm sure there's a lot of budding writers out there who just were hoping for some tips to get started or to keep moving along.
I hope to hear from them, and thank you. Again, I'm a huge fan of your show and of what you're doing, and I hope I can be of service to anyone out there.
I want to thank you so much to the listener for joining us today. I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Woman Over 40. And until next time, I hope you take care.